News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today. Hope we can make it even better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Real quick shout out to my friend Manda Mutiny at Fortune Tattoo, who is working on my tattoo sleeve that I'm working on right now. I had an appointment with her last week, and that song came on while I was there in the chair, so that was super fun. Anyway, joining me on the show today, as he does so very often, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited. I know we got Superman coming out this weekend. We're both really looking forward to seeing it. And that said, we're also not wanting to kind of spoil it for people that haven't had a chance yet. The show comes out on Saturdays, so we just want to give you guys a little bit of time.
Yeah, we're going to give you a little breather. We're going to talk in depth about Superman next week. We're recording before we've actually seen it, so that's part of why we're doing it, but we're also doing it to give everybody some time to see and enjoy the movie before anything gets spoiled for them. So, hopefully it's great, and hopefully it's everything that, I mean, this is by far the movie I'm most excited about this year, so.
A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about anticipated movies, and one that came up on the list was, on my list, I should clarify, was I Know What You Did Last Summer, which,
right,
90s slasher movie, and it kind of feeds into this really niche of a niche topic that we're going to be discussing today, and I'm super excited about that. I think this episode's really going to appeal to genre fans of a certain age, Julio.
I mean, I think genre fans in general, too. I mean,
yeah,
at least horror genre fans. And, you know, I should make a note here, too, before we get into it. Part of the reason we've been doing a lot of horror stuff on the show this year, aside from the fact that Jeremy and I are just into it, you know, we both are big horror fans. But, you know, we kind of look at the podcast and we look at the analytics we get on the podcast. And when we do horror episodes, they seem to get a little bit more listening than some of the other things we do on the show. So, you know, we're always looking at what does the audience seem to want, and the audience seems to want that. Now, if you don't want that and you want something else, you know, make your voice heard. You could always email me. My email is gopensacola@gmail.com. And, you know, we'd always love to hear from you what you like or what you don't like about the show. If there's other things you wish we were talking about that we're not talking about, we'd love to know it. But until, you know, unless and until you talk to us about it, you either email us or you run into us in the wild somewhere, and that's happened once or twice as well. The only thing we have to base on is the podcast listens. So horror stuff's been getting good response, so we're doing horror stuff. We wanted to kind of talk.
Actually,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think actually they should forward those emails to me. If you don't want me talking about horror, just jeremy@idgaf.com and get back to you.
So somehow I don't think that's a real email address.
I kid. No,
yeah,
we do.
I mean,
we do definitely care that people are engaged with what we're talking about. And I think this will be a special one for some of our listeners.
Yeah, I mean,
so
and it is a passion subject for both of us, too. You know, it's not, we wouldn't. Like, if we got a bunch of people coming in saying, well, you know, I really want you to talk about, you know, the life cycle of the green bean, you know, that's, I mean, you can say it, but neither one of us know anything about it, and we're probably not going to do it. Now, if we got,
as
you know,
if that's ever stopped you before.
If we got, you know, 500,000 emails that were easily noticeable as being from different people, then that might be then I might be going out and taking a class about the lifestyle of a green bean, but you know, that's not happening. Yeah, and we're just like just to, you know, give you a little inside baseball here. You know, we look at the analytics of, you know, our episodes, and I can tell you that, like, we did an episode a few weeks back about Alien and Predator, and that got a lot of great grins. We did one about Doctor Who, which did really well too, and that was surprising. We talked about
Shout out to the Whovians, man.
Yeah, when we did Sinners, that, you know, got a lot of listens, and we did one about the year ahead in horror, and that got a lot of listens. So, you know, you notice certain themes that are recurring, and you gotta, you know, at some point you got to play to the audience if you're going to continue to have an audience. So
what are we talking about today?
So, you know, we kind of talked about this in a broader perspective. You mentioned, I Know What You Did Last Summer is getting ready to come out. And we realized, like, we wanted to look at the state of some of the iconic horror franchises, because some of them have been in the news and are in process. Some of them have kind of faded a little bit. And there's also been, like, you know, at the same time, this attempt to create these new franchises when you have a movie that's a hit and then they decide to, you know, they're going to jump on it and try to build from there. And if you're lucky and you are, you know, Parker Robbins, is that his name? Am I getting his name right? I should remember it.
Parker Finn. Screen.
Parker Finn, thank you. Parker Robbins is the Hood in Ironheart. Parker Finn, you know, you create something called Smile and it becomes a surprise hit and you make another one and
awesome.
It does even better.
Even better.
If you are less lucky, you make a movie called Megan and it's a huge hit. And then you decide, well, it's the character and the character can do anything. And, you know, even Jason Blum, the guy that runs Blumhouse, admitted that that's exactly what they did. They thought, oh, well, Megan's an icon now. We can do anything with Megan. So we're going to do, instead of doing a horror / sci-fi film, we're going to do a comic thriller with her.
Jason Blum's apology tour for Megan 2.0 was just something to behold. It is so funny listening to him.
Well, it's just
making excuses for this movie.
It's clearly not what people wanted. And
no, you're right.
It may or may not be a good movie. I haven't seen it, so I can't say. But it's just not what people wanted with the character. Mm-hmm. And this is a movie that, like if you really look at this, like, it was tracking to where it could have been the number one movie at the box office that week. And then the more awareness increased of the movie, the more the tracking dropped, which
just
is not the way it's supposed to happen, because it became clear to the people that loved the first one that this wasn't the movie they were looking for. Kind of like another spectrum that's not a horror movie. It's kind of like Joker.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Joker is a movie that said, oh, you liked that? Well, guess what? We were making fun of you.
We're making a musical now.
Yeah.
You said horror. I'm saying niche within niche. We're kind of looking more specifically at slashers. I'm sure other stuff will come up in the conversation. But we're going to talk about some of the big 80s into 90s iconic slasher movies.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I know that you have a strong feeling for I Know What You Did Last Summer. And I'll be honest with you, I know I saw the first one. I can't tell you that I remember it. And I mean, despite the original cast that was in that, despite it being Sarah Michelle Gellar and Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. and who else was in it?
I mean, that's the ones I know of.
Those are the three, like the three big ones, obviously. You know, it's just not one that I think has stuck with me the way that...
No, it was written by Kevin Williamson at a time that horror fans believed that he could do no wrong, and it kind of proved that he could. I've actually only seen the first two. I think this is the fourth one that's going to be released here July 18th.
I want to say there might have been a couple of direct-to-video ones. The third one was a direct-to-video one.
Uh-huh.
So there may have been a couple of those, but... It's not a franchise that I feel as strongly as you do about. I think it's cool that they got Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jennifer Love Hewitt to come back. And there's been a lot of noise about, well, why isn't Sarah Michelle Gellar coming back too? And she's had to come out and say, guys, I died.
Yeah. Yeah. What a silly question.
Like my husband's in it. The director's one of my best friends. My character's dead.
Yeah, there's that.
She is making noise about wanting to come back and Scream, though, which her character died in Scream, but they're bringing back everybody in Scream that...
Not that it matters,
That died. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there are no dead people in Scream. Everybody eventually comes back to life in Scream. We're going to talk about this a little more when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Rumors spreading around in that Texas town about the shack outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls. I'm racing.
AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are talking about the state of some of the iconic horror franchises. I think we're really starting in the 70s, but like going to the 70s through the 90s, and you know, kind of in light of I Know What You Did Last Summer coming back here in the next little bit, but also some of our favorite horror franchises have been in the news lately. There's some action going on around possible reboots or remakes or new movies in the series, et cetera, et cetera. And I think if we're going to do this, we're going to kind of go in the order that these franchises debuted, Jeremy. So
makes sense.
If you're going to Texas, you got to play the little old band from Texas, ZZ Top.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go wrong with that song, man. Can't go wrong with like any ZZ Top from the 70s and 80s. Just great stuff. But, so we're going to talk about Leatherface here. We're going to talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is really, while I think you could argue that Halloween really kicks off the slasher genre in earnest, and yeah, there was stuff that came before that. I mean, obviously Black Christmas is really kind of the root of that subgenre. But mm-hmm. Leatherface kind of gets put into that genre too, even though I don't think he's really a traditional slasher.
Well, this will come up again.
But yeah. Oh, for sure. But it's still that like that masked killer that's out to get you. Of course, Leatherface kind of based on a real life serial killer, Ed Gein, who's also the basis for Norman Bates and Psycho, which
mm-hmm.
is also an argument for maybe being the first slasher. Maybe even more so than Leatherface or Black Christmas or any of the others. But, I don't think we're going to be subjected to a new Norman Bates movie anytime soon.
No.
And I think that we should probably be glad for that. Like nobody's ever going to do it like Anthony Perkins did it. Let's leave the Hitchcock classic alone. I think that Gus Van Sant proved that needs to be left alone. I'm sure.
Well, you mentioned Anthony Perkins, and there's a weird 6 degrees of separation in this Texas Chainsaw Massacre news. This one, the original was released in 1974. This is
Hooper.
A weird franchise because we also got a remake in 2003 and then again in 2022. So they keep on trying with this one. I don't know what we would get out of the new direction, but there's a lot of names attached to it, potentially getting it.
Rewind a second here on the remakes. The 2022 uh-huh. was there were two remakes?
Yeah, the 2022 one is, I guess, a legacy sequel, right? Because it does acknowledge that the previous stuff happened. That's another weird thing.
I'll admit I have not seen every single movie in this franchise. The original from 1974 is an absolute stone cold classic. It's one of the best horror movies ever made, without a doubt. Directed by Tobe Hooper, who would go on to do a number of other great things, most notably probably Poltergeist, which is also probably one of the greatest horror movies of all time. Very infamously, the other thing you might not know about this movie. Of course, it is done in kind of a documentary style, and there was a narrator of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who that narrator is? This is a fun trivia question that I think a lot of people know, but maybe a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, he's the guy from Night Court. I can't think of his name
John,
right
John
now.
John Larroquette, yes. From
Larroquette, there you
went,
go.
Went on to win a bunch of Emmy Awards for Night Court, was just in the Night Court revival that just ended on NBC, and of course, Ben had his own show, the John Larroquette Show, for a number of years, and really is, become primarily known for comedy. But he has gone back to this franchise a couple of times and done the voice again, too.
Yeah.
And it was a thing, too, where he came in because basically he was buddies with Toby Hooper. And I think he did it uncredited, if I remember right, in the
that
original film,
correct.
Just because he was buddies with Toby Hooper and one of those wacky things. What's your overall, aside from the original, which, as we mentioned, is untouchable. What's your overall feeling on this franchise? Is it a franchise that you're big on, or are you kind of iffy on?
Yeah, I kind of like the Platinum Dunes ones. So the remake that came out in 2003 was a Michael Bay production, and then there was a follow-up to it. There were several others in addition to those, but those first two, they are suitably grimy and uncomfortable and really nasty, which a lot of people remember the original film as being that, but I would contend that actually a lot of that stuff is more implied than it is explicit. These remakes really leaned in. I thought the second remake, the 2022 film, was really bad. I don't care for the franchise that much.
A couple of iconic images out of the first one, of course, Leatherface himself and that scene of him with the sun behind him and raising the chainsaw over his head.
Uh-huh.
But I think also the scene of the final girl escaping in the back of the truck covered in blood is...
Sally just laughing maniacally.
Yeah, that's a pretty iconic one, too. To address what you were saying, the 95 film, which you're talking about, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, is kind of a remake, kind of not really. It acknowledges the events of the previous two sequels, but it is... Basically, the plot is basically a virtual remake. Now,
I'm talking about, though, were the 03 and the 2022.
Okay, so you're not talking about 95. So the fun thing about the 95 film is who the stars of that film are.
Yeah.
Oscar winners Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey. So,
and if I'm not mistaken, Zellweger doesn't want anything to do with it. It's a mess.
I don't think anybody wants to do with it. So the 2003 is the Platinum Dunes that you're talking about, followed by the prequel Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Beginning in 2006, and then you had Texas Chainsaw 3D in 2013. That was a direct sequel to the original, with no relation to the previous sequels or the remake. That's the one with Daddario.
Uh huh.
Man.
And then you've got
Alexandra Daddario. Wait a minute. Hold on. I got to rewind here a second. How did I not see this? Alexandra Daddario in 3D and I didn't see it?
More like 3DD. We can edit that out.
No, that's fine. That's fine. There's nothing. Yeah, I mean, it's prurient, but that's okay. Then you had there was a prequel to the 2003 remake. That was Leatherface. I actually have seen that one, weirdly.
Weird.
And then there was another sequel to that was just called Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, and that's the 2022 one, I think, that you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's the one that was released exclusively to Netflix.
The direct to Netflix, yeah.
But that's a sequel,
like,
apparently, and not a remake.
So go ahead.
But that's a sequel, apparently, and not a remake.
Yeah, but in the same way that, and it is, technically, in the same way that, like, Halloween 2018, which will come up again, is... not a remake, it's actually a legacy sequel, which Scream kind of addresses. All of the semantics of this stuff gets really interesting in itself, but the news coming out of it, because I know we've got a time situation, but Toby Hooper and Kim Henkel created this property, and 8 studios and or streamers are vying for it. Names that are attached, dude, JT Molnar and Roy Lee, Oz Perkins, Brian Bertino, Jordan Peele, and what's looking like potentially the most likely and probably the best fit is Taylor Sheridan.
Do you think Taylor Sheridan's the best fit?
I mean, I do.
I think Taylor Sheridan's brilliant, but, like, this is outside of his... I mean, it's in his wheelhouse in that it's Texas.
Yes.
But it's outside his wheelhouse in that it's Chainsaw Massacre.
I might be wrong. Did he do season one of True Detective?
I don't think he did True Detective, but he did, Yellowstone, and he does a lot of Western stuff or Western theme stuff.
Yeah, I was mistaken on that.
Yeah. I'm not sure who you're thinking of that did that film, but I mean, it's an interesting idea. Jordan Peele, if Jordan Peele gets his hands on this, he's not going to direct it. He's going to produce it, but he's not going to direct it. So you're looking at, and you know, plus or minus, you're looking at this being more like the recent reboot of Candyman, which was kind of a sequel slash reboot. I mean, to me, the one I'd want to see get it is Oz Perkins, but although that he's saying he'd only produce and co-write it as well. So
he'd be a great fit.
Yeah. I mean, I do kind of want to see, you know, Toby Hooper was kind of an auteur, and I'd kind of like to see an auteur do this again. Whether you can live up to the original, I don't know that that's possible. You know who I would love to see take this on that's not in the mix at all?
Hit me.
Ty West.
Yeah. I think he would be a good fit on the heels of the X trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, like, X definitely has elements. It's got elements, a lot of the original slashers, but it's got some Texas Chainsaw elements in there, too. It's got some of that creep factor that Texas Chainsaw had, that creepy family situation going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of the appeal of Texas Chainsaw initially was that it was like, it was one of those movies that, like, at one point, I think they were threatening to release it with an X rating. You know, that it was just considered so shocking and so scary and so, you know, so beyond. And it was, in fact, theatrically released by the same company that released Deep Throat. So.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mobster money.
So it had that dirty, you know, cachet to it. Like that was, mm-hmm. you know, like it felt forbidden. Like it felt dangerous. It felt scary. Like, you know, to people in 74, like it wasn't just that it was a scary movie. Like it felt seedy to be involved with it. And that was part of what was the appeal of it. And I don't know how you recapture that in the internet age.
Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, even all that aside, it's a brilliant film. So I don't know how you capture that either. That's a big hurdle. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are discussing some of the most iconic horror franchises of all time and kind of what the state of those franchises is today. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Halloween because there's a reason we're kind of in an off cycle on Halloween right now. We just had a big 3-film reboot / sequel version of Halloween that just wrapped up with Halloween Ends with Jamie Lee Curtis back for the 3 movies and providing a pretty definitive end for Michael Myers, at least for that series of movies.
I know how you feel about the third one. What's your overall temp on the David Gordon Green Halloween franchise trilogy?
Absolutely loved the first two. Absolutely loved the first two. The third one went off a cliff.
Did you hate the third one?
I didn't hate it. I thought there were some interesting kills in it. You know, but I think that the focus of that movie should have been squarely on Michael and Laurie. And they spent half the movie setting up what could have been another franchise, except then they killed the guy that would have been the other franchise.
Yeah, there's that.
So, yeah, you know, it's like, why did you spend my time with all that? Like, they should have just done a spinoff movie with that character, and I would have been here for it. Like, you could have spun that character off into his whole other series, and that had interesting potential. This movie should have focused on the final battle between Laurie and Michael, and that's not what it did.
I tend to agree. I think that it felt like David Gordon Green had a really strong handle on the mythos and what audiences wanted to see. And while I don't think the third film, Halloween Ends, was a good conclusion to the trilogy for the exact reasons you said, I did think it was an interesting film, and I would put it ahead of a lot of the Halloween movies.
There's some bad Halloween movies. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about, and you want to talk about a franchise that has the most confusing continuity of any franchise, it's got to be this one. I mean, because it's been rebooted twice. It's, you know, you had the two Rob Zombie movies that were off. And then, of course, you've got Halloween 3 that isn't even really part of the chronology with anything else.
Uh-huh.
It's not even a Michael Myers movie. Now,
what did you think about Zombies Halloween?
You know, I actually haven't seen him. I can't speak on him.
Yeah, he would have been a good fit for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, way better than he was a good fit for the Halloween franchise. I feel like, because like you said, we are kind of at an end cycle, and we'll switch gears after this because we could talk ad nauseum about the work of John Carpenter and what a genius he was. But I would kind of like to see a guy like Adam Wingard, who did You're Next and The Guest, kind of take it back to that synthy early 80s era vibes that Carpenter really did kind of establish with his filmography.
Yeah, at the risk of repeating myself, Ty West could also do some amazing things with this. I mean, if you look at what he did, especially with X and Maxine.
Mm-hmm.
Maxine is basically an 80s revenge thriller.
That's a really good point.
It's basically a Death Wish or an Angel or one of those movies, you know?
Yeah.
Like he gets that aesthetic. So
yeah, that's a really good call.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I want Ty West to make everything, and I actually want him to do original stuff. I don't want him necessarily to just be subsumed in, you know, old franchises, but just to bring you up to date on what is going on with the Halloween rights, they were in a bidding war in October of last year, purchased by Miramax and Trancas International Films. They have the TV rights and apparently are working on some kind of TV series that would take things back to the start and spin off of the 78 original. So it would ignore the David Gordon Green movies. It would ignore, you know, basically everything else. Basically, that's the only thing that ever seems to work with Halloween. Is just ignoring all of the sequels and all the reboots and remakes and going back to 78.
Yeah.
So, you know, but there's only so many times we can do that too. So.
Let's hop from 78 to 81.
Okay. All right. So we're going, I take it, we're going to move on to Camp Crystal Lake, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's do that. Yeah, that sounds fun. Like Michael Myers, I do think established the template for the slasher film, but Friday the 13th, I feel like is kind of the quintessential slasher franchise. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is where we start to go off the, and I mean, I think Michael Myers to some extent too, there's some stuff that happened with Michael Myers over the years that couldn't be explained without something supernatural.
Uh-huh.
I mean, clearly Jason eventually, you know, and I recognize that we don't really get to Jason until a couple of films in.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, even the sequence at the end of, how do you interpret the sequence at the end of the first Friday the 13th? For those who don't remember, and this is, spoiler warnings for a, you know, what, 50-year-old franchise?
God, isn't that crazy?
Not quite.
40.
40, yeah.
Something, 43, something.
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is I saw it on cable when I was 10 years old, and that scared the living crap out of me.
okay, nice.
Yeah, the original, I mean. For those who don't know, Jason Voorhees was not the killer in the original Friday the 13th. The killer was, in fact, Jason's mom,
mm-hmm.
Who was out to get revenge on the various teens who ignored Jason drowning to death and, you know, dressed up in this, you know, costume to go get him. She didn't even have the hockey. We didn't even have the hockey mask in the first one.
No.
Yeah. So, Jason eventually, you know, somehow comes back from the dead. And this is the first one that is like a fully supernatural killer, I think. The first slasher that's fully a supernatural. I mean, we get into some supernatural stuff later on with Michael Myers, but initially Michael Myers was not a supernatural killer, and it's always been Michael Myers. Versus this being Jason's mom. Jason's mom loses her head. We never see Jason's mom again. But Jason himself ends up coming back from the dead and becoming this, a revenant, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible movie, but that's another story. So yeah, I mean, it's a franchise that's really gone off in some weird directions over the years. Sometimes for good, sometimes for bad, sometimes for so bad it's good. And by that I'm meaning Jason Takes Manhattan.
Jason X is another good example of that.
Was Jason X so bad it's good, or was Jason X just bad?
I'm in the former camp, but I would totally not fault anybody. So, but to your question,
so that's the Jason in space movie, for the record. Because yes, we had a Jason in space movie. We had a horror, a big horror movie team up, or horror movie battle that we'll get into a little later, and then we did have a reboot on this franchise. That was also Platinum Dunes, right?
And also pretty good. Yeah, the 2009 Friday the 13th is pretty solid. It's basically a retelling of the first three movies.
And didn't we get a sequel to that
thing,
too?
Say again?
Didn't we get a sequel to that one too?
No, that was the last official Friday the 13th.
So there was not a sequel to the film?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
No.
So
there's a lot of weird stuff going on with this one. We'll go ahead and get into that. So there's the A24 film, Crystal Lake, that's coming out.
That's a series,
Linda
actually.
Linda Cardellini.
Series,
yes,
actually.
Yes, I'm sorry. Uh-huh. Linda Cardellini is going to be playing Pamela Voorhees, which, awesome. We love some Linda Cardellini, so that's cool. Otherwise, details about the series are pretty sparse. Like, it's supposedly a reimagining of the beginning, or like the prequel. I don't even know if they own the rights to Jason. Can you unpack any of that, or do we not know?
The rights to this series are, as I understand it, are a big mess. Yeah, and that's part of why we haven't gotten another film.
But Greg Nicotero did some concept art.
Yeah.
Over Jason for something.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We had some video game stuff that was in the works there, and I don't know what really happened with that. Just to look at, you know, canceled projects, there's any number of them over the years. There's been a mm-hmm. lawsuit. I think Crystal Lake's the next thing we're going to see with any kind of specificity. Sean Cunningham, who was the original creator, has pitched a reboot, but it's at least 3 years because studios are hesitant to fund it, which is silly to me. That seems like it's a no-brainer that if you get a good new Friday the 13th movie out there, it's going to make money.
You could make a $5 million movie. Maybe that's an exaggeration. You could make a $10 million movie and recoup in opening weekend. No problem.
Easily. But I'm very interested to see what Crystal Lake's going to do, because it does seem like we've got some interesting people involved in it. Yet another thing that Brian Fuller was involved in for a little while and then dipped out of. That seems to happen a lot.
A24 produced, which is kind of exciting for the horror fans.
Yeah. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
We'll be right back. to tell about this guy. You all know me, I'm scared as hell. He comes to me at night after I crawl into bed. He's burnt up like a weenie and his name is Fred. He wears the same hat and sweater every single day. And even if it's hot outside, he wears it anyway. He's gone when I'm awake, but he shows up when I'm asleep. I can't believe that there's a nightmare on my street.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we're talking about some of our favorite horror franchises, some of the most iconic horror franchises of all time, and kind of what the state of those franchises is right now as we're here in 2025. And early Will Smith there.
Good song, good pick. Yeah. I was surprised to hear that one.
Yeah, we're going into the fourth horseman of the 80s icons here with, of course, Freddy Krueger in the Nightmare on Elm Street series. And we've alluded to the series a little bit. You know, we mentioned that this is one of the, there have been a lot of crossovers in other mediums like comics and things like that. But there was actually a Freddy versus Jason movie, if you don't remember.
I saw it on the silver screen at midnight, and it's just one of my fondest movie-going memories. They actually do a pretty good job at reconciling these two franchises that were like fans always wanted to see them come together, and they did it in a way that was fun and self-aware enough to really enjoy.
It is a fun movie. I think its biggest fault is it spends too much time on the human victims that nobody cares about.
Like,
it's like Godzilla versus King Kong, but they spend all the time on, you know, the people around them. No, we're here for the monster on monster action, please. You know, that's how I felt about that movie too.
I don't think it can be overstated how important and influential Wes Craven was as a filmmaker. I mean, they refer to the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, which the original came out in 1984, as the house that Freddy built. And so, like,
that's New Line
Cinema.
He funded
that studio.
Yeah. Was it New Line?
New Line, yeah.
Which was also the original behind Friday the 13th as well, among others.
And Wes Craven can't be understated for his contributions when he again redefined the slasher franchise in 1996 with the original Scream. So, like, he is a icon. Not every one of his films were great, but you and I talked a little bit about some of the films that he did that don't get as much shine. And he's just a really talented filmmaker. But you mentioned something about Nightmare on Elm Street.
There was an attempt to reboot this franchise a few years ago and was not very successful either critically or commercially. I think it made okay money, but...
I didn't see it.
I have seen about 5-10 minutes of it, which unfortunately I came across like the climactic 5-10 minutes of it.
You saw the end.
And it was just like, it's just wrong in every way. It's...
yeah.
And I kind of wonder whether that's not the failing of this franchise and why this franchise has been like on snooze for some time.
Uh-huh.
Like, can you do it without Robert Englund?
See, that's an interesting thing.
Freddy, when we talk
about the pantheon of slashers, he's the one that breaks the mold, and he's the character that is completely intrinsically linked. You can't just put somebody behind the Freddy makeup in the same way you can put somebody behind the hockey mask, right?
Yeah, Freddy has personality in the way that none of these others do. Freddy is a fully formed character and not just a means to chop it up teenagers. You know, he is...
So what do you think?
I don't know, man. I mean, Jackie Earle Haley is an awfully good actor, and he couldn't do it.
And if we were going to get weird and start fan casting, is there somebody that you can think of? You want to circle back around to that? Because I don't have anybody.
I mean, I've never even stopped to think about who I'd put in the role. Like, it's got to be somebody who can, you know, be menacing and yet still kind of funny. And, like, execute the bad puns.
Yeah, and so there's that also. It's like he was a comedic presence in a way that few slasher movies were able to kind of like, nobody really even tried, but managing those two tones together to varying degrees. I think the first Nightmare on Elm Street is a legitimately good movie.
Also,
you also mentioned another one.
Also legitimately scary as heck. I saw that movie, I think I was 12 years old. Snuck in to see it in the theater. First time I ever like bought a ticket for something else and then snuck in to see an R-rated movie.
Oh, you saw it in the movie theater?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
And it's, yeah, I saw it at a theater that's not there anymore, Varsity 6 Theater in Tampa, Florida.
Very cool.
Oh, man, just scared the living daylights out of me. I had to sleep with the lights on for days. And, you know, of course, I couldn't say anything because I'd done something I wasn't supposed to do.
I can't share that with anybody.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a pretty core memory. This is one of my all time favorite horror franchises as a result. You know, I'm a big fan of the series. Dream Warriors, I think, is a very underrated movie, the third movie.
I love that one. I think it's awesome. I think A New Nightmare kind of returns Scary Freddy, but he still has some one-liners in it. It's just tough. Without Wes Craven and without Robert Englund, which Robert Englund is still with us, but old man Freddy, I don't know about that.
He's said in so many words that he thinks he's too old to do it. Like he definitely can't keep up with the action that would be required. He said the only way that he would probably do it is if it was like a high-end animated project and he could just do the voice.
Oh, interesting.
Which, you know, has some merit to it. Now, I did just see that the part of the issue with Elm Street is that a lot of these things, these older franchises, the rights start reverting to the creators and things like that, and that becomes part of it. So the rights on Elm Street are kind of separately held by the Wes Craven estate and New Line Cinemas at this point. New Line has the international rights, but the Craven estate has the domestic rights. And the Craven estate has apparently been taking pitches, but New Line is not on board with it yet. So it could still be a while, which is kind of good. It gives them some time to figure it out. You know who's not going to do it because he doesn't have time, but who I would love to see take a swing at it?
Who's that?
This is the left field, but I think you're going to like
West.
It. Huh?
Ty West.
No, not Ty West. Although that would be interesting too. But Dream Project, it's not going to happen because he's running a studio. James Gunn.
I think that's a really good pick. I can 100% see that.
I think James Gunn could write and direct the heck out of a Nightmare on Elm Street project.
One thing that the Freddy movies never capitalized on in a way that I think it's so ripe with potential is the surrealism of dreams and the nonlinear and just the abstract nature of them. I think they could get really, really cerebral and strange with the dream sequences in a way they haven't before. And maybe that would be a way to skirt away from needing Freddy to be Robert Englund.
So are you thinking like a Dark City or The Cell or, you know, something.
Those are good examples.
In that range, something or even something like Donnie Darko.
Yes. Yeah. All of those are good call-outs. I think that you could do something really cool with that.
That could be an interesting take. Of course, Alex Proyas did Dark City. He's not with us anymore. So yeah, I mean, I'm reluctant to say what's his name that did Donnie Darko. Just because everything.
I don't know.
Richard, his name's gone right out of my head, but he hasn't done anything since that was like, he went on to do Southland Tales and The Box, and his career just kind of fizzled after Donnie Darko. And then The Cell was Tarsem Singh, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What about, this is another kind of left field pick. What about Darren Aronofsky?
I swear, and it is so wild that you said that. That is literally who I was thinking of. His new movie looks awesome, but I think he could do something really cool with it.
Well, you know, it's going to be some time, so we'll see what happens. And we're starting to run low on time for the show, so I wanted to get into Wes Craven's other mega franchise, and that's Scream. We're getting into the 90s now, in fairness. But Ghostface has certainly become an icon in the same mold as the others. Although it's interesting because Ghostface is the one that is not consistently the same character from movie to movie. Ghostface has been a different person in every film. And Scream is equally a whodunit and a slasher. And and that's one of the things I like about the franchise. Scream is a franchise that has not made a bad movie yet.
I think we're about to get one.
You think so? You're worried about Kevin Williamson, who created the franchise?
He's not a director, but so you're right. He's writing, directing the new one. He's not directed anything, I don't think.
Not in a while. He has, but not in a while.
We're bringing back the whole cast, which is weird.
Yeah.
What did he direct?
We have a lot. I can't remember the name of the film, but he directed one or two films kind of after he got big off of Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer and all that.
Okay.
I mean, we have the problem of they built up this new version of the franchise with Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega, and then, in my opinion, made a very bad decision by cutting Melissa Barrera loose and then losing Jenna Ortega as a result. But the only way you can save it is to bring Nev back. It's interesting that they're bringing back Matthew Lillard at this point, which is something a lot of people have wanted to see, but there's not an organic way to do it unless he somehow faked his death. So,
or he's a ghost or something. Yeah, you know?
They got a lot of splaining to do here, Lucy. So we'll see what happens, but we're not far away from that. And when it comes, we'll talk about it on this show, but we're done for this week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.